living in ways that do not hurt. This is where you factor into all of this. First of all, if you'll look on pages 14 through 16 in your staff training manual, you need to have, number one, respect for the survivor. A couple of things you need to really focus on as we talk about this area. First of all, you have to have respect. You have to respect their unwillingness to let you in to help them. This is not about you. It is about the survivor. And their unwillingness to open up to you most likely has nothing to do with you. You have got to give them time. You have got to respect the fact that you're not the staff person or you're not the helper that they want to talk to. And if they don't want to talk to you, if they don't want to let you in, you know, it's not about you. It's about what they perceive. You don't know who you remind them of. You don't know what's going on inside of them. And if you say, you're going to either trust me or nobody, you're either going to let me in to help you with this or nobody is, then you've just raped them all over again. And it is critical that you respect them and respect their unwillingness to let you in. You've got to check your ego out with this kind of ministry and understand that whatever's going on is most likely not about you at all. It's about what's going on inside of them. B, you need to respect the survivor's need for time to learn to trust you. Because it takes time, and you're going to be so frustrated if you're working in a teen challenge model and your students are maybe a couple of weeks out from graduating and finally they let you in and you know you've got 2 weeks left with them. But that is something that's very, very common, and you need to respect their need for time to learn to trust you. C, you need to respect the survivor's vulnerabilities and fears. You need to respect their fears. Most of their fears are going to be completely irrational to you. They're not going to make sense to you. But you need to understand that those fears are very real and they're very paralyzing fears. And sometimes you have to do things to accommodate those fears while they're on their journey, remembering they're not at the end of the road when you're working on this. And sometimes if you'll just do something simple like letting them leave the bathroom light on or put a nightlight in their room, or leaving the door open instead of closing it, or closing it instead of leaving it open. If you will just allow that to take place, then all of a sudden you've let them know this person gets it, and it eases them into that journey that they're going to go through. You need to respect the survivor's need for privacy as they work through the curriculum. This is not a curriculum where you yell in class for everybody, okay, all of you sexual abuse survivors, you go over there and start working on your curriculum now. This needs to be very private. This needs to be very personal, and it's not something that needs to be announced to the student body. It's not something that needs to be announced to your support group or whatever context you're working on this in. This is very private, and you need to understand that it is private. E, you need to respect the survivor's needs for absolute confidentiality. Get their permission first. Fill in the blank. Get their permission first. If you must share details of their abuse or situation with other staff, family, pastors, or whatever, share only necessary information with the involved staff. You do not need to share everything you know, only what is necessary after you have received permission to do so. This is not your call. This is the survivor's call. This is the student's call. They're the ones that need to be told from the beginning, you have complete ownership over this process, and I am not going to talk to anyone or say anything without first telling you first. And even if you need to discuss perhaps a particular issue that a student's going through or the person that you're helping is going through with someone else, you need to let them know what's taking place and give them ownership of every detail of it. They cannot be blindsided by you or the circumstances of your ministry as they're working through this, because if they're blindsided, then they're going to feel completely unsafe. They're going to feel completely violated all over again, and you will have damaged yet another layer and a deeper layer because they've risked opening up to you. So you need to be very, very careful about confidentiality. This is confidential information, and it cannot be shared with other people. You need to respect the survivor if they share the details of abuse. And as you look in your notes, do not pry for more information. Most of you watching this are not therapists, and it is you are not skilled at helping to dislodge pain in a person's mind And so it is not your place to pry for more information. Don't make judgmental remarks, and do not express shock or disgust or repulsion. I've had people say to me, if you only knew, and I have assured them that if they choose to ever share something with me, that I'm not going to throw them away and I'm not going to recoil in horror, because I understand that sexual abuse is not just abuse, it's sexual. And many people who've been through this experience, the shame and the perversion that they have been exposed to and participated in is just totally dominating their life. And so it's very, very important for you to respect. If they want to share just a little, fine. And I really encourage you to not pry for much information, because that is not important for you to know. The information and the specifics are not important for you to know. This is not about you. It's about the survivor. It's about what they perceive. And so be careful to respect what they share, and be careful in your response. Even if what they share with you is totally repulsive and disgusting to you, you must measure your response carefully. They're watching for any sign that you're going to reject them, because that will be a signal for them to completely shut down and close that door, and that's a very dangerous thing. Number two, restrict the survivor from sharing details of their abuse with their peers or in public testimony. And you must weigh this out carefully, and it must be thought through thoroughly before a person actually begins to share publicly what's happened. And I also strongly discourage survivors from, especially in the context of Teen Challenge, from telling other students in the program much about their abuse, because this is very dangerous and very erotic stuff. And it has a lot of volatile potential if it's not carefully managed. And I strongly discourage people from sharing the sexual abuse part of their testimony in their public testimony or in their written testimony at the same time. You've got to weigh this out carefully. And it's not your call. It's their call. But many times they'll feel like they want to go public with this because perhaps God is doing something amazing in their life, and then 2 weeks later they're totally feeling exposed and ashamed. And so we have to sort of protect the flame, the little flicker, while it grows into a flame. And I strongly discourage people from sharing this in a public format. Number three, do not lead people in places you have been unwilling to go yourself. It is often mind-boggling to me that staff can so pressure and bully a student to pursue working on their sexual abuse issues when that staff person or that helper has not been willing to work on it themselves. And, you know, the truth is, it's much easier for you to fix someone else than for you to pursue God in your own personal issues and your own personal pain, which leads us to A, which is to make sure you have worked through your own abuse as well as or are well on the way. This doesn't mean you've got it all figured out or that you're completely at peace with everything. But what it does mean is you can't take somebody to a place you haven't been willing to go yourself. And so as you consider helping people who've been sexually abused, make sure that you have at least started on the path to address your own abuse issues and are working towards your own healing. B, do not expect everyone to respond the same way you did. If you are an abuse survivor and God has worked in your life this way, or a therapist has worked in your life this way, and you've come to these conclusions, that's wonderful. But you need to understand, not everybody's going to respond the same way you did, and don't gauge or judge where they are based on your own experiences, because your experiences are narrow and your response is personal, and they will respond in a completely different way that will perhaps surprise you and them. And C, and this is very, very critical, especially if you're an abuse survivor, do not be surprised if you relive your own abuse as you're helping others. One of the really huge downsides to this ministry, especially if you are a sexual abuse survivor, is that your abuse becomes bigger than it should be. It's not in proportion to your total life experience, because you continue to revisit your own abuse experience as you're helping other people get through theirs. And the normal process is there's this huge time of confrontation of the abuse and the issues and all the damage and the pain, and it's just chaotic and in turmoil for the survivor. But then it's in the context of other discipleship, and it's in the context of life and the events of life, and soon that large intense moment sort of levels back off, and it becomes part of the landscape of their lives. But if you've been an abuse, if you're an abuse survivor and you're working with abuse survivors, what this becomes unnatural for you, because your abuse never goes away. It's like always in the middle of that intensity as you help other people. And you need to be aware of that, because it can really send your life spiraling and reeling out of control if you're not careful. Number four, expect a crisis. Survivors often have outbursts of rage, nightmares and sleeping problems, depression, suicidal thoughts, or flashbacks. B, you need to give survivors a little more grace while they're working through this curriculum. But at the same time, C, do not allow survivors to use the fact that they're going through the curriculum as an excuse for avoiding responsibility or pushing the boundaries of your program. In light of all of that, D, you need to be careful how you administer discipline, making sure you are calm, compelled by love, and use discipline as a teaching tool, which it should always be anyway. It should not be a punishment tool. It should be a teaching tool. E, keep involved staff informed when survivors are working through this curriculum, just to let everybody know, you know, this student's going through this right now, and if you have any questions, come to me. F, recognize when you are in over your head, and bring in more qualified people to help the survivor. And this doesn't mean that you have a lack of faith. It means that you have wisdom. If somebody falls and breaks a leg, you don't think twice about taking that person to the emergency room to get that leg set, because the doctor is more skilled and has the tools to set the leg and the knowledge. So because you take somebody with a broken leg to the hospital doesn't mean you don't have faith. It just means that you have the wisdom to know, I need to take you to a more skilled person. You need to know your limitations. You cannot be everything for everyone. And there are some people that will cross your path that their experiences and the trauma that they're going through are way beyond your skills as a helper. And so don't be afraid to get professional help for this person. And understand that is the ultimate expression of your wisdom and your faith, that God has given other people the skills to be skilled helpers. Number five, do not unwisely open yourself to become vulnerable, which means A, you need to keep your relationship with Jesus growing and passionate. Your relationship with Jesus growing and passionate. B, you need to pay careful attention to your thought life and your secret self as you help survivors through this process. Pay attention to what it is that you're dwelling on. Pay attention to how you're thinking about this person that you're helping, where your mind is going, where your thoughts are going. Pay attention to what you're doing in the dark when nobody's around, because those are areas that make you vulnerable if you're not careful, and it will give the enemy a foothold in your life. So you've got to keep your relationship with Christ growing and passionate, and you need to pay very, very close attention to your thought life and what's going on when nobody's looking. C, you need to be honest about yourself with your own struggles and engage God and godly people in that struggle. We ask the people in our ministries to be real. We ask them to acknowledge their struggles. We ask them to invite us in and invite God in to help them with their struggles. And you need to to be careful with your own life if you're struggling. And look, this is very explosive stuff that you work with. Sexual abuse is very erotic. And if you're not careful, your mind and your life are going to become derailed on all that. And if you're struggling, it doesn't mean that God and people suddenly have no use for you in this ministry. It means that you're being honest. You're making yourself accountable to God, and you're making yourself accountable to other people. And that's not a bad thing. That's what our faith is about. I'm struggling. I need something bigger than myself. Paul said it best, I'm weak, and God said, at last, you get it, you're weak, now you need me. And so that's where we need to be very clear about in our own minds, to be honest about our own struggles, and to engage God in those struggles. D, be aware of the erotic, fill in the blank, erotic nature of this ministry, because sexual abuse is not just abuse, it is sexual. E, recognize how vulnerable abuse survivors are, and their most urgent need outside of being safe is to feel loved. Fill in the blank, loved. But please make sure that you demonstrate godly love that cannot be misinterpreted. F, you need to be careful what you do, making sure that you do not put yourself in a compromising situation where you could fall into sin or be accused of sin. You and I are always one accusation away from somebody pointing a finger and saying, she did this or he did this, and all of a sudden your integrity's gone, your reputation's gone, and possibly your ministry's gone. So you need to be very careful that you don't place yourself in compromising situations, in rooms where people can't see you, to take people off alone. You need to protect what appears to be, so that you don't fall into sin or be accused of sin. G, and this is very critical for you as a helper, keep the sexualization of intimacy issue in the front of your mind and help survivors separate sex, fill in the blank, sex, from intimacy. I have often had, in our teen challenge program, we have an adult male facility, and I've often had students, as I've helped them work through the curriculum, make comments to me like, I'm having sexual thoughts about you. And they're upset by that, and they're honest enough to talk to me about that. And the reason they're upset is because that's not how they want to think. And what I have to do as a helper is, instead of throwing the discipline book at them or having some sort of ballistic reaction to that, is to first of all honor the fact that they have been honest with me, because at least they verbalized it where maybe somebody else hasn't. But second of all, again, using this disclosure as a teaching tool and saying to them, you know, what you're really feeling is being important. What you're really feeling is if somebody knows and understands. What you're really feeling is that you have significance, that you matter. And because sexual abuse has connected sex to intimacy, that feels sexual to you. And so our challenge as helpers is to rather than to throw a person away, with accountability, you need to begin to help them understand, you know, what you're really feeling is loved. And that's not sexual. This is a relationship with boundaries. I'm very clear about what my boundaries are, and I'm very clear about what your boundaries are. And you may be feeling sexual, but what you're truly feeling, the deeper feeling, is intimacy. And as you work through this, you're going to be able to separate those two things, because that's part of the journey of healing. H, you need to use a team approach so that more than one staff person is involved with a survivor. It is a very, very unhealthy thing, and again, we're talking about total discipleship now. It's a very, very unhealthy thing for anyone that we work with to only be attached to us. And this is not about committed to freedom. This is just about people that we minister to. They need to hear more voices than yours. And I say quite frequently that it is those people on staff or in leadership that are the most difficult people for a student. That's the person that student's going to grow the most in Christ over. And they need a lot of different voices, and you need to incorporate the whole team that's working with you in ministry to be a number of voices for this student. Some of these voices will be firm, some of these voices will be gentle, some of these voices will be instructional, some of these voices will be exemplary. These people need more than one voice in their life. Otherwise, a very, very unhealthy coalition begins, and that's not good for you or for them. I remember that the only person you can change is you. fill in the blank. The only person you can change is you. You do not have the power, fill in the blank, you do not have the power to change other people. All you can do is point them in the right direction and lead by example. Jay, you need to keep all discussions moving toward biblical resolution, and you need to keep God at the center of all discussions, because if sexualization of intimacy is taking place and you begin to bring Jesus Christ and God into that conversation and biblical solutions, you know what? The sexualization part of that formula tends to vanish just a little bit, because if you're keeping your conversations rather than talking about the sexual part of it, you're taking that damage and pointing it towards biblical resolution and towards God. The conversation remains healthy and the relationship boundaries remain healthy. Kay, you need to engage in spiritual warfare, to pray without ceasing, and believe God for a miracle. Believe God for a miracle. I am more convinced each day that I live that sexual abuse and the ministry to people who've been sexually abused is taking on hell itself. And you must understand, as Jesus said to his disciples, some of this only comes with fasting and prayer. And you need to wage war on behalf of the people that you're ministering to, because this is intense and it's unbelievable, the war that happens around people who are abuse survivors. And number six, and this is the most important one, remember this: there is a God. I am not him. You are not the Messiah. You are not the creator. You are a person who's on a journey. You're just a little bit further down the path than the people that you are helping. Okay, we're going to come back and talk about resources.